Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. The phone lines are still lighting up. The texters are too about our question of the day. We'll carry that over at 6 o'clock, so stay tuned. And hopefully we get an answer before the end of the show at 7. Joining us now from the Stockdale Law Firm to talk about social media, its effect on divorce, and plenty of other things along the way, we have Bob Boyd and Justin Smith, two attorneys. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on with us here today.
Thank you. Nice to see you again.
I got a dumb question for you, and maybe one of you guys knows the answer. Are there more divorces filed the morning after a Big Bears loss against the Green Bay Packers, or no?
I don't know the statistics on that, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Right. Someone's already upset about something, and that's what, you know, pushes them over the edge.
Would do it. It would do it.
Yeah. Just, I wanted to know, actually, because a lot of people talked about during the pandemic that we were going to see this wave of divorce proceedings happen either during it or right afterwards. Have you seen anything like that, Justin, or no?
Yeah, there was definitely an uptick in filings, kind of once things started opening back up, for sure. During the pandemic, courthouses were mostly shut down.
Right.
They were open for emergency purposes and some other basic proceedings, but once things started opening up, there was definitely an uptick.
Right, because a lot of people talked like, oh, there was going to be, and we didn't know if it would be borne out, but a little uptick for sure. All right, so let's pivot here about talking about social media and divorce. This is one of those topics where I feel like it's a no-brainer, but so many people do silly things on the internet while they're going, or, you know, they did it beforehand, before they were going through the divorce proceedings, that can bite them on the other end. So, Bob, do you see that a lot, that what happens on social media ends up in a court of law?
It absolutely does. And when people come in to see us, one of the first things we explain to them is, get off of social media. Whatever you're doing, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
It nothing good can come of it. Even if the two of you are amicably resolving your differences and working toward a resolution, social media is not going to help it. Things come up and it hurts people's feelings and things go south very quickly.
Can things you said be introduced as evidence in court?
On social media?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. There are some certain foundational problems that you can overcome. You can subpoena emails and text messages if you push it far enough. And, mm-hmm. and those things, yeah, certainly can come into evidence. It's a little tricky to get it done, but it happens.
Yeah, for sure. So is it about trying to, not that you would ever want to delete evidence, but deleting old posts or stuff? I mean, I guess you can't really truly recommend that, but maybe just wiping a lot of things clear, Justin, is a good idea.
No, I mean, I think if you're, yeah, I mean, depending on your circumstances coming into it, but yeah, you can go scrub your social media.
It's like looking for a job. I mean, honestly,
yeah,
I mean, anyone can see that stuff, so it's good to give yourself a little bit of a clean bill of health. So what sorts of things do you recommend? Is it just shutting down social media altogether, or what?
I mean, absolutely. That's if, especially if it's going to be a contentious divorce, and you know that pretty much, you know, at the first meeting, you got to just shut down, go mm-hmm. off of it completely. That's the best advice. But if you are going to stay on,
right, a lot of people feel like they are tied to it and it's part of who they are. I don't know who those people are, but they feel that way. What are some other tips you can give people if they can't get all the way off?
You got to make yourself private. You got to defriend your spouse's family and her friends and all of her acquaintances, and because you don't want, because they'll still follow you, even if you've you know, defriended your spouse. But I call Facebook devil book, and
I think a lot of people are starting to agree with it there.
Nothing good can come of it.
What is it, Bob? Is it just that you're afraid of what you might post being used as evidence, or is it other things, or is it just also the idea of just severing that relationship is good for your mental well-being too?
Well, we don't get into the psychological aspect of it, and what is a good practice. Certainly getting away from it is a good idea when you're in the middle of an emotional proceeding like a divorce. You just don't realize how far-reaching some of the things you do can be. I've had situations where an email was sent to a friend, and the friend then distributed it to other friends.
Forwarded it on to
who
other
then,
people, yeah.
Who then or happened to be friends of the spouse. And it you just don't know how big the circle is going to be or who has access to it. I've also had situations where, and I don't quite know the logistics of all of this, mm-hmm. but phone accounts are linked and not through the client's account, but through a child's account on the same program or same plan, mm-hmm. they can have access to those kinds of things. With Illinois being a no-fault divorce state, it's not that the fault necessarily is going to cause a problem,
okay.
But it just complicates things in moving things along. And certainly in custody cases, you just don't want to have that depiction of you come forward.
I mean, it's more than just the social media. I mean, you mentioned accounts. You're talking about your relationship with the cloud, right? And things along those lines, too, right, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, it's there forever. And once it's out, you can't pull that back. You can't unring that bell, so to speak. And a lot of people, I find, and this is even leading up to the decision to file for divorce, they view social media as kind of a support system.
Mm-hmm.
In their own personal life,
right?
Where they think they're getting counseling and they're posting things.
I think a lot of people, some legitimately connect with people maybe they haven't talked to in years, and they feel like that's a great place to do that and to get some emotional support.
Yeah, and vent, you know, certain opinions about certain things, and maybe get feedback just to feel that affirmation. And mm-hmm. there's other people out there that feel that way. But all of those things can and will probably come back to haunt you in your divorce.
I don't want to, like, obviously get into too specific of situations, but are there like, would it be like, oh, this person posted on Facebook a disparaging opinion of the other person, and that can be brought up? What sorts of things do you worry about seeing in court through the social media or through connected devices?
Well, once you're in court and you're trying to depict a particular view of your client, you want to present the best foot. Mm-hmm. Put the best foot forward. And when you start seeing disparaging remarks about the other spouse, just bombarding them, I explain to clients, it's easy to explain one little glitch or one little problem, and even the second one you can kind of explain away most instances. But at some point, when you've got 15 or 20 of these things and you have to explain them all away, it starts building a case for the other side.
Looks like a pattern.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just a bad habit to get into. It's not a place to vent.
Do you guys recommend, if someone's about to start divorce proceedings or they're maybe in it, I mean, cutting off all contact whatsoever with that spouse? I mean, easier said than done, because there's got to be communication. Or is it about documenting what that communication was between the two of you, just in case they ever try to use something against you in the future?
Yeah, you definitely want to limit your communications. But if you have minor children involved, you have to.
Yeah, you got to talk about
that
stuff.
Who's picking them up from school? Who's taking them to hockey today? Those communications have to occur,
mm-hmm.
But you really have to limit it. And you know, if your kids are involved, stick to the kids.
Right.
Don't start talking about money and things. And there are programs out there that courts use and parents use that just kind of corral all of their communications in one central mm-hmm. program, and you can use that. And there's even like tone meters within that program. So if you send it kind of reads your emails, and,
right.
you know, little red flags come up on the words you're using and things. And
right.
so there are programs out there that can aid in that communication. And if you do have to communicate, that's a good place to use. It's called Our Family Wizard for those who might want to know.
Okay.
But it's a useful program.
Our Family Wizard. Okay. Bob, is there something to be said about also, let's say it's not an amicable split and you feel like you are being the victim of this repetitive behavior that we've talked about? Maybe you're the spouse that you're not posting anything, but someone else is. And some of that information, you know, your spouse is posting things. Some of that information could be useful. Is it a matter of documenting it, talking with your lawyer and showing them what's happening, screen grabbing, either harassing messages or disparaging messages? Is that something that the spouse who is on the receiving end of that needs to be cognizant of too?
Absolutely. And it almost goes without saying that we don't have to explain to clients to send that to us. They do that
They do it right
routinely.
Away. Yeah.
But once in a while you have to say, you know, you're telling me this. Send the emails to me. Let me take a look. Let me see what it says. And some of them are just horrible rants.
Right.
And if necessary, that sometimes can be useful, particularly in custody proceedings and where you're trying to show the attitude or behavior of the other spouse. Kind of recently in the news, you know, emails sort of last forever.
Right.
And they come back to haunt you. And the sooner you can get control of that, tell our clients, don't do that. If you want to vent, give me a call. We'll talk through it. But don't, however you may have been communicating in the past, it's not necessarily the way it has to be going forward. there's now a referee who can look at this stuff and say, well, that's not appropriate. Don't be that person. Be on the other side of it.
For sure. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. 312-981-7200. If you do have questions, you can text them in. You can call them on in. Most importantly, visit StogsdilleLaw.com. That's StogsdilleLaw.com. Or call them at 630-462-9500. 630-462-9500. Do not navigate this process on your own. Go with trusted people who know what they're doing, like Bob and Justin and the folks at StogsdilleLaw.com. More after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Continuing our conversations with Bob Boyd and Justin Smith from Stogsdill Law Firm. Just talking in the break about the case, oh, it's been about a month or two now, about the judge who initially ruled right here in Chicago that the mother couldn't have custody of the child or see the child because she wasn't vaccinated. It caused quite an uproar. The judge went back and reversed the decision ultimately, or took it on back. And not necessarily to comment on that, because that opens up a whole other can of worms. But, I mean, I guess that's one of the things that is impossible to prepare for. And COVID has really thrown a loop on a lot of this stuff, Bob. And Justin, it's that it's a different world right now. And there's a lot of confusion about what could happen and what a judge might say or not say.
Exactly. It's not even just confusion among lawyers,
right,
or among people in general, but what judges are going to do. Judges don't necessarily, or at least early on, didn't have a view as to what exactly was going to be entailed in everything that was being presented.
Right.
They're kind of playing it. They've got a better grasp now, but
right,
they were just playing it by ear as they
we
went along
were.
As well.
Yeah.
Who knew what was the right thing to do? And now that vaccinations are available,
right,
that creates a new can of worms as to whether or not you have to be vaccinated or not vaccinated.
Well, and just right now, obviously, it's kids of a certain age can get the vaccine. Soon that might be expanded to others. I imagine we're going to see more court cases about divorced parents trying to make the decisions. And, like, I think everyone's got the best interest of the kids in mind, but might be a differing opinion, and that's going to cause some confusion, I imagine.
Absolutely. And whether or not you want to, you were going to be operating remotely, or you were going to go into classrooms, and whether you're going to wear a mask or not wear a mask, within a family, those issues can eventually kind of be resolved. But when you're in litigation and you take one position, the other side takes the other position, then it puts judges in difficult spots.
I can't even imagine. Justin, we were talking kind of at the top about how court cases were really kind of shut down for a while, except for emergencies. Where are you at right now? Where are divorce courts right now? Are they back full steam ahead, or is there a backlog of cases that they're trying to get through?
There's definitely a backlog, and it varies county to county. We are in DuPage County, and the judges there realize that they do have a backlog. So mm-hmm. they try to get you in, to the extent they can, in-person proceedings. Things tend to resolve themselves faster and more efficiently if you're in person than trying to do the Zoom stuff. But there is definitely a backlog, and just now scratching that surface.
So if someone had like a timeline in mind, let's say they're going to call you tomorrow and want to start some process, I know it's individual by case and a lot of things matter, but like roughly speaking, how long does the process take now from start to finish?
It's impossible to say.
Okay.
It is really. But I think right now, if you were starting your case, your timeline would be pretty similar to pre-pandemic.
Okay, which is what, generally? I don't even know.
Well, if there are children involved in the case, the custody portion of your case is going to be resolved within 18 months by Supreme Court rule. So that's
18 months, okay, a year and a half.
The outlier. Now, most cases don't take that long. Some take longer, but mm-hmm. that's kind of a general guideline.
Yeah. You know, just general advice for someone that's sitting there tonight. And look, it's never a fun process, and it's probably something that people, you know, they obviously didn't enter a marriage to end up divorced, and that's a really difficult part of life, of course. Bob, do you want any advice for folks right now who are kind of weighing that decision, or maybe they know they're about to do it? First steps that they can do to ensure as smooth a process as possible?
It really varies from case to case to case. When people come in, I give them advice, financial advice, custody advice, those types of things. And I explain to them, the one thing I can't tell you is whether or not you're ready to be divorced. That's an emotional decision. It's one that you have to think about and ultimately come up with your position. Once you make that decision, you know better the spouse that you're about to start proceedings with, and what that's going to entail. And people can come in and tell me, you know, we've got this all worked out, until you start writing down what they think is going to be the resolution, and you see that they're really not on the same page at all. Other people come in and they think it's going to be a battle, and they're not nearly as far apart as they think they are.
Right.
So it's really hard to predict how long it's going to last. But when you make the emotional decision to start the proceedings, realize it could be a year. It could be 18 months. And sometimes in instances, it can be even beyond that. But realize it's a process, and it's going to take some time, and you just have to have the emotional strength to get through it.
Right. And just, I know you guys aren't the psychologists here. You're not trying to work people through all the emotions of it. But obviously, you're seeing people in very emotional states. I imagine, at least, I don't know if you have resources in the office, or at least having been through it and worked, helped other people through it, I imagine there is a sort of comfort, at least knowing that you know what you're doing. And there's, I think a lot of people, before they decide to, go through with it, they worry so much about the future. At least signing up with you guys and starting that process, there is at least some comfort there knowing that, hey, I've seen a lot of stuff. I've represented a lot of different people. I know what to how to handle these situations.
Absolutely. You have to be realistic with them from the get-go, as far as what's the time frame you're looking at, what kind of information you're going to need from them.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge is king in our business. If you're the spouse who doesn't have access to the tax returns, if you don't have access to the banking records, that's an issue.
Yeah.
We're going to have to have their cooperation from the other side to get that information. So if we have to send out discovery requests, that's going to take time.
Yeah.
So you need to explain that to your client up front, and as they see those milestones hit, within the first 30 days, this is going to happen, and they kind of feel comfortable, or at least more comfortable in the process.
You mentioned like banking records and stuff like that. Even for like the happiest married couple out there, I think everyone, both partners in the relationship, should really just ascertain to know exactly, like, login information, account information. Is that something you advise for every single couple out there, to have an equal footing, at least in terms of the financing and the banking, in terms of knowing where it comes from, where it's going?
By the time they come to see us, those lines have already been drawn. There are couples that cooperate and have all of that information. There are others where, I think it just happens organically, one person takes over the finances and how the bills are going to get paid and what accounts things are going to go into, and the other kind of pays less attention. Those are difficult spots, but you try and get them caught up as quickly as possible. Once you get the financial information, then you can kind of lead them along and explain to them, good news, bad news. This is probably what's going to happen.
Right. All right, Bob Boyd, Justin Smith, that's our time today. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Hopefully answered some of your questions. Great text coming in, great questions as well. Bob Boyd and Justin Smith from Stogsdill Law Firm. Again, you can call them at, write this down, 630-462-9500, 630-462-9500, or visit StogsdillLaw.com. That's StogsdillLaw.com. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.